The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
You're very welcome back to the programme. We're into the second hour of this Thursday show. Thanks so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. I'll get to some of your comments coming in so far this morning. How many trans people in Donegal? Why are we having to listen to the trans debate? In 50 years, I've only met one, a man who dressed as a woman and was tolerated in the community. He didn't try to invade women's spaces or push his thoughts onto school children. Some balance, please. Of course, there is balance. Firstly, you know, these are topical conversations that are happening around the world. Secondly, maybe it exposes that we are a very open, welcoming community. That's positive, isn't it? And firstly, and thirdly, Pippa is very eloquent and very informed on these matters and had her say as well. So I don't think you could get any more balanced in relation to that. This caller says, Pippa's full of contradictions. The exception shouldn't be the rule when it comes to the harm of puberty blockers and operations, yet the exception is the rule for when the majority wants single-sex toilets. Sex is defined at conception and confirmed at birth, says this listener. When a skeleton is excavated, there is no transgender science. There are either male or female. Morning, Greg. Let our children grow as children. When they're 18 years, they can explore gender if they want. Another, what planet is your guest on regarding trans? There was a case where a rapist decided to be a trans woman and the Scottish government jailed him and put him in a woman's prison. And there are cases like that, of course. It does happen. There was a high profile case in Ireland. But the important thing about talking about these things is that that's a very extreme example. And should that extreme example be used to make the life more difficult of a small group of people living in this country as well? Do you know what I mean? So that's why these conversations out in the open are useful, because they're raging online and people have very extreme views. At least here we can have a nice civilized conversation. Regarding this sex identity conversation, there is still a thing in Europe today. They are told that their sexual orientation or gender identity is a disorder and are pressured to reject it or suppress it. Another listening to this lady really brings it home. Their needs come before ours, not equal to. Men in women mixed toilets, change in spaces, that's what's needed. Then everyone can be happy. Some minority expect everyone to change or accept their discomfort to suit their needs. The thing is though, there are members of the trans community who want to use facilities that conform to their gender, and mixed toilets for many is not actually a solution. Hi, I'm a mother of two daughters, and there's not a chance in hell that I'd want a transgender woman in the toilets with them. Stop pandering to the one, Greg. What about the discrimination suffered by the disabled every day everywhere? Trans people don't have to book a bus 48 hours in advance and have to hold it in every town, as there are so few disabled access toilets. Sick listening to the trans agenda on Highland, with Greg bending over backwards to accommodate them. Well, most people think we shouldn't be having the conversation at all because it's anti-trans. Secondly, I'm really, really very, very proud of the work we've done on this programme, not only on bus access for people with disabilities, but actually having a very key role in changing strategy in relation to that. Now, there's still a lot of work to do, but we've been on campaigns where there was no access for people with disabilities. And I could even name the routes whereby I would like to think we played a part in getting those positions in getting those buses in situ. Also, I've been as strong as anyone, an advocate in the media for changing spaces, toilets, and supporting those, fundraising for them, chatting to them when they've been opened, and helping with campaigns to try and get them more widespread. The amount of times I've talked on this show of someone who is not as able-bodied as others having to plan trips. I mean, affected by this in my own family, having to plan trips down the country because there's no toilets available for them that are properly disabled access. So I'm not being defensive, but I would be really proud with the work we've done on the show in terms of what you're talking of there. And talking about women's rights or trans rights to access toilets in no way degrades or diminishes the topic of disabled people's access to the same facilities. It's just a different conversation on a different day. Hi, Greg. The woman on the trans debate is wrong. Trans women are men and trans men are women. Does she not understand biology? There are two sexes, and that is male and female. That comes in from Sean on the island, Aaron Moore. Yeah, but she conceded that, I believe. It's the gender element of it that people believe there's intersex and the gender's more of how you feel. Why is transgender so important now when it's always been there for millions of years and it's become so important now? Not here, and I'm not trying to start it here. I'm not having a sort of controversial debate on it because there are large groups of organisations that represent women in sport, for an example, that feel that women have been denied opportunities because of transgender women in their sports. We've seen that case of a person being quite seriously injured by a person born a male playing Gaelic football as a transgender woman. There are people also that are not comfortable with trans people in their spaces. They're the ones having the conversation and driving the conversation. What bit of common sense does your guest not understand? There's no such thing as trans women or trans men. It's simply biologically impossible, regardless of how they dress or act. It's not discrimination. It's common sense. But people was talking about how they feel, that you can feel it in yourself. I don't feel male. Like, it's not that I don't. I suppose, you know, there's a gender dysphoria thing whereby your gender is particularly important. But maybe I'm entitled. Maybe I'm a white, straight male, and why would I be conscious of my gender? Maybe that's an argument, but it's not something I wake up every morning and think about, or stand in front of a mirror and look at. I just really don't have time for it. I just get on with it. But for some people, it's obviously incredibly important. A caller says, I don't know any trans people. Maybe I'm uneducated, but how would I know that you were trans unless you told me? Well, in the trans community, there's a phrase they use where you can pass, you know, where you are born a man passing as a woman, or many people listening might feel that they could easily distinguish. Pipper is correct. Private shared space. We don't object to sharing on trains, planes and homes, etc. But they are also single occupancy spaces. We were kind of talking about multi-occupancy spaces, but I take your point. Greg, would it not be more important to discuss the starvation of children in Gaza, to discuss transgender that's been inhuman since the beginning of time? We talk about the situation in Gaza pretty much daily on this show. But it's never been like that. Even when there is such a horrendous situation ongoing where you talk about the one thing or only talk about the one thing. You know, there's many things in life that affect people and things are subjective. And maybe that topic is more important, whether we like it or not, or you like it or not. Maybe that topic is more important to that person in that time than what is happening in another part of the world. So it's subjective and we have to vary it up a little bit as well. So Pippa wants no female or male toilets, just mixed. Seriously, everyone discomfort to suit their needs or her needs. I'm sure the vast majority of boys and girls will love that. Listening to this conversation just shows that no other opinion matters. Now, a couple more here. Good morning, Greg. Could you please play a birthday request for my great friend Matty McCarran in Gibbstown, Liscooley? Have the best birthday ever. Lots of love from Maeve. Hi to Matty's brother Corey also. Thank you. Greg, nice to meet you, or nice to see you in Carn on Tuesday. Thank you. You look totally different to what I imagined. Brackets, in a good way. Yay. Okay. I think I remember there was a time. Now I'm not putting myself in with these people, right? I'm only up here in Donegal working away on this little show. But you know, I didn't know what listened to the radio. I didn't know what Jerry Ryan looked like, Larry Gogan, Simon Young. I didn't know what they looked like. And locally, you know, there's a few local DJs too that I didn't know what they looked like. But nowadays too, with social media, I think everyone knows what we all look like. So it's not as big a bigger thing anymore. But anyway, it was lovely to meet you, I'm sure, because I loved meeting everyone up there as well. Got some great photos. Actually, I didn't post those photos on my own socials. I know they're on Highlands, but I must get to that. Because as I say, it was so lovely to meet so many lovely, wonderful people. As we covered on the show before, we're borrowing more than we have for quite some time, if ever. Personal loans have reached record highs last year. We're being told it's being driven by car loans and green home improvements. Nick Charalambos is Managing Director of Alpha Wealth, and he joins me on the show now to discuss this. Good morning, Nick. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. I'm very good, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. When I, you know, when I see where house prices are going and I see, you know, the lives that, that many people are living, and I'm not begrudging anyone, don't get me wrong, it just does kind of start feel reminiscent of where we were going or where we were at pre-crash. But we might get into that, but I just want, from your perspective, what do you think is happening? Why do we feel so confident or well off that we can afford to borrow at the rates that we are?
I suppose, Greg, I work as a financial advisor, and I have done for the last 27 years, having set up a business 11 years ago. And interestingly, I've seen continuously year after year where people have this kind of, I suppose, it's the living creep, as I call it, but this expectation where we buy, you know, bigger cars and bigger, shinier houses. And it's almost like following this trend. Now, we had the recession back, for those people that are old enough, I'm 51, in 08, 09. And subsequent to that, you know, it seems to have been this continuous movement. And we've seen that both in house prices, obviously, over the last number of years, but also in things like cars and other kind of material things. The holidays we go on tend to be kind of more expensive. We tend to go a bit further. And that's just, I suppose, the cycle that we find ourselves.
It's quite interesting because we have an astronomical amount of money in saving accounts in this country, right? So I'm interested in who has that money to save it. But then, conversely, is it a different group of individuals then that are doing the borrowing? And do they really have the money to meet the payments on that borrowing?
What's really interesting, Greg, is that there is that kind of a, almost like disparity of those that are saving. And we have record number of savers at the moment, as billions of euros sitting in relatively low interest deposit interest accounts. And then on the other side, we've got borrowers who are a record high. We had over 230 loans, new loans drawn down last year, 20% increase on the year before. So you wonder, you know, why is there this kind of disparity? But interestingly, what we've noticed, Greg, and I see this in my daily life, those people that are saving are also, interestingly, in some cases, the borrowers as well. Because we've got into this kind of environment, and we see this on with the advent of these online banks that offer easy loans, the likes of Revolut, for example. And, you know, we seem to be in this culture of, you know, borrowing, really not necessarily actually even needing the money. And it really can be a problem, and I've faced this many, many times.
Yeah, I've related this story before. It was run up to the crash. I was walking through a shopping centre in Derry, and, you know, two young women came up to me in, from Ulster Bank and said, you know, would you be interested in a credit card? And I filled out this little pamphlet form, and about a week later, a credit card, a gold credit card, if you don't mind, dropped through my door with 10 grand limit on it. Like, I simply couldn't afford it. Ended up maxing it out, of course, and being a big victim of the crash like so many were. So some might look at this, though, and say, right, we're better off, OK? We've got more confidence. The sentiment is good. We're confident in where we're at, and we're confident in where we will be at. But this is against, really, messaging globally that things could be turning a little bit sour. So should we be seeing this as a red flag, then, rather than maybe some sort of a positive reflection on our attitudes and the situations we find ourselves in?
I believe so, Greg. And there's this concept called money dysmorphia, which is basically where people have this perception that they're actually better off than they are. Now, I understand that many listeners may have loans, the most typical one obviously being a mortgage, and that in itself needs a little bit of management. There's been a quite a big movement in interest rates over the last few years. As you know, we've seen this increase back in 2022, 2023, and then this quite stark fall. And I do think there's a little bit of management in that, because that tends to be obviously the biggest loan that we have in our lifetimes. And we want to be quite conscious of the interest rate and how we can kind of manage that. But also, in terms of loans, many of us are familiar with the usual car loan and the concept of PCP and so on. And whilst I respect the fact that some people have to borrow money, if you want to do house improvements and you don't have the finance to that, that is why loans were created as a concept and a necessary tool. The problem then becomes, how do you then look at trying to repay that? Because unfortunately, it's loggerheads with this whole concept of what we call financial independence, which is basically getting to a point where you are essentially debt free. So that gives you that ability to then think about, you know, what you're going to do in returns of your lifestyle and your income requirements to basically pull back from your working days. Because whilst you have loans, it's very, very difficult to do that.
So say I had no reserve as such, okay, and then I went and got a loan out to do something that was non-essential, but it's something that I wanted to do. I presume that would be concerning to you as a someone working in finance. You would say, well, you know, like if things go to pot, A, you've got nothing to fall back on, but B, then you'd have this debt hanging over you that the payments for which you wouldn't be able to meet. Do you think a lot of us are in that situation that we're not planning for our future? We're not putting into a pension. We don't have a reserve, but we're locking ourselves into 3, 5, 7, or even maybe 40 years of debt.
I do, Greg. And in terms of that scenario that you've described, and it's one that I'm seeing more and more often, the way that I'd probably position it is, firstly, I think it's important for clients to just do the general basics. And I know it sounds fairly mundane, but even just doing a financial budgeter once a year, it's just a good, you know, reflection on where you are in relation to your finances in general. The second thing is that I often come across clients who do borrow money, sometimes, believe it or not, maybe unknowingly, to put it into an account as that reserve. And I say to them, but then you're in this kind of loss situation where you've borrowed at 7-8% plus interest rates to leave it in the bank at close to zero. So really, I see the loan as that kind of, you know, emergency, if you want to call it that. But typically what we advise people to do is try and have that contingency. I don't like the word emergency fund. I prefer to use it as this money that we've kind of almost like allocated to certain things that we want to do. Because a lot of us, for example, know that we're going to go on a summer holiday this year. And if you just try and pre-plan a small bit and say to yourself, okay, well, if I'm heading off and I've paid for maybe the flights, but I know I need to pay for my accommodation, that could cost me 2, 3, 4,000 euro. You need to think about, is that money available to you now? And if it isn't, how are you going to get that money available to you when you actually need it? Because
if you don't plan ahead really and are able to budget for that trip next year, you know, putting away 50 quid a month or whatever it might be, there is a strong argument that you actually can't afford it. So you're borrowing for something that you can't afford. So that 1 or 2 weeks will be gone, but you're left paying back this money. So really, we should be able to front load that really with planning if we can afford it.
Absolutely, Greg. And most of what we do as financial planners is help people just find the right balance. Because in many cases, what it actually is, it's not necessarily that they can't afford the holiday. And look, you know, as a family person, I have 4 children and blended family. It's something that's very important to us. So it's not something that I personally would go without. But what I would say is that maybe they're putting too much into their pension, or maybe they're putting, you know, too much into a short-term savings account that they actually probably have either forgotten about or left alone. I come across a lot of people, Greg, that have accounts that have almost become half dormant, you know, respectfully, the likes of the credit union from back in the day, or they might have some money sitting in some form of, you know, even pension fund that they forgot about. And they just need to kind of recognize and understand their ability to access money when they need it. But also, what I say to everyone is that if you have income coming into your household, whether that's one income or two, what are you doing with it in relation to what I call these 3 different pots? This is the short, medium, and long term. And it's just finding the right balance between them and helping them to recognize where these future expenses are going to come from, because we all get hit by them. You know, the adage of the likes of, say, Christmas, for example. I'm not being funny, but Christmas in my household costs probably the best part of 2 to 3 grand. Once you get presents, you know,
throw everything into it. Yeah, trip, of course,
it does. Yeah. And yet it's something that we don't really take too much.
But the thing though, you see, Mick, your advice is sound, but in these moments, you know, whether it's keeping up with the Joneses or whatever it might be, in these moments, we don't want to hear what you have to say, because it could be voices similar to yours in the run up to 2008, 2009 that we ignored, because all the signs were there and there were people warning. But I think you get caught up in this sense that everything's all right. I've got a nice car. I look like I'm doing well. I don't want to hear from Nick. He's a naysayer until such time then as the S hits the F.
Yeah, look, and I get that, Greg, absolutely. And again, I try and live in the real world, and I'm not here to kind of preach, you know.
No, I'm not saying gospel, you are. I'm saying what you're saying is correct, but we just don't want to hear it sometimes. Yeah.
But
to
the
our
point
detriment.
I make to the listeners, Greg, is that live within your means, and that should, in hopefully a lot of cases, mean that, for example, you know, the government over the last two budgets, Greg, have given us some money back. We know that. You know, typically we were well off in January of 24 and January 25 to the tune of about 50 to 70 euros per month on average. And yet many of us didn't really take any countenance of that because of this cost of living creep, as we call it. We just absorbed it. And really all I'm going to try and say to listeners is, I appreciate, you know, we may be in a position, we may have a few loans outstanding, credit cards being the worst of them. You know, if there's any listeners out there that do have credit card debt, I think it's really important to try and redress that. And, you know, it might be a case of just rethinking the way that they're doing things. For example, I use a concept called snowballing, which is essentially trying to pay off the smallest debt you have first and then move the money that you're paying into that loan into the next one and so on, hence the snowball. There's another variation of that called the avalanche, where you hit the highest interest one. But really, the main thing is just be cognizant of it. I think there's probably in some cases a lack of reference, because some people ask me, Nick, why are you so anti-debt? You know, why do you mind so much? Because in some cases it is generally affordable for most of us. I have a lot of clients that are paying off car loans comfortably every month. They may have other personal loans. And I say that not only is the cost of interest higher than they would get in any form of investment typically, but also that repayment that they're making, the 300, 400, 500 euros a month to repay back that loan, it's preventing them from putting that money towards either savings for the short term, maybe longer term for their retirement. And that generally tends to be the problem.
But we can find the 300 or 400 euro to write down debt on a depreciating asset. But we would probably argue that we couldn't find the 300 or 400 to plan for the future, because it's more... It's more pleasing to live in the now. It's a human condition, I think.
It is, Greg. But there are, again, there's probably a bit of leakage as well, because I come across people that are paying too much for certain things, like insurances, for example. Mm. And again, this is why, in my opinion, I think it's important. And we've all done it. You know, I myself, like, we've signed up to Netflix and we forgot to cancel the subscription that's going out every month. It's those sort of things.
I stumbled up, and I don't have a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but I stumbled on an insurance product for a mobile phone I got 8 years ago, and I didn't even want to think of how much I did.
The other thing as well, Greg, is, sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
Getting tax back. You know, a lot of listeners out there, they're owed money by revenue. Mm. You know, they've made very clear reference to the fact that many of us who worked from home over the last 4 years, rented a property, for example, that, you know, us, that they haven't claimed the rent relief for. And yet these are easy wins that I do feel people can take advantage of. And you'd be surprised how much it can actually amount to.
Yeah.
And again, if there's any listeners out there that are unsure, do reach out to a financial advisor, because I think sometimes, and there can be sometimes emotional issues surrounding, you know, there can be a little bit of embarrassment. Maybe if there's a couple, I've found that there tends to be this like yin and yang, where one of the people may be a saver and the other a spender. Mm. And it can cause quite big issues, to be honest with you.
And just finally, I would wonder, you know, say for instance of if we got in contact with 100 listeners right now who got a loan out, say for instance in the last month, how many of us, in all honesty, if we're relieved to get the loan or excited as to what we might do with it, know precisely how much that credit will cost us over a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 year period. You know, do we really ignore that 3 grand costs us 4.5 or whatever it might be? I think most of us wouldn't know that.
They wouldn't, Greg, I agree. And the fact is that the banks have made it very easy now for people to get these loans. And, you know, again, I get spammed by these banks regularly, and they can be quite enticing. So, you know, for me, what I'd say is just think about what you actually need. I use this rule of 72, which is basically if you want to get something, wait 72 hours. And if you still feel it's important, then okay, maybe it does need to be taken. Because we're all very emotional creatures, and unfortunately, we sometimes act on impulse. And that tends to be the problem.
Yeah. And listen, you know, you talked about maybe it's an uncomfortable conversation to have with a financial advisor, but often then you find yourself not doing so and going down the road and having a similar conversation with the great people in MABS. Do you know what I mean? So the one thing I was guilty of, and I think many people were at a time, but particularly coming into the recession, was completely burying the head in the sand and just, you know, batting off the calls and the letters and just thinking things were going to change without any intervention. And unfortunately, that doesn't really, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't, Greg, you're right. And as I say, I think a lot of people can, you know, make inroads into reducing debt. You know, I've done it very successfully for many people. And sometimes it takes time. You know, it won't necessarily be this kind of overnight solution. But certainly, in terms of just trying to understand where you are, I think it's really important. There's some really good free online tools people can access, even on our own webpage, Alpha Wealth, where they can basically get some really good instruction, look at the financial budgeter without any obligation or cost on their part.
Okay. Nick Charalambos, Managing Director of Alpha Wealth, thanks so much for your time. An informative, interesting conversation. Take care.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Bye-bye. And you can check out Alpha Wealth for more email, more info there. So, as you would have heard on this show and others, a member of the Irish language hip-hop group Kneecap has been charged with a terror offence after allegedly displaying a flag in support of proscribed organisation Hezbollah at a London gig. Liam Og O'Hanna, 27, has been charged by the Met after an incident on the 21st of November, 24, at the O2 Forum in Kentish Town, London. The video appeared on X, and everyone decided to forward it on to the Popo. Well, Mr. O'Hanna, who performs under the name Mokara, is due to appear at Westminster's Magistrate Court on Wednesday, the 18th of June. Now, because what Kneecap were doing really was opposing and against what was happening in Gaza, the default here is that you shouldn't be talking about that issue. You should actually be talking about the tens of thousands of innocents that are dying in Gaza. And of course, the second issue trumps the first, but it doesn't make the first disappear. So we have to talk about that as well. We're doing so with Pat McCart, former editor of the Derry Journal newspaper. Pat, thank you so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so what's your view on this? The band themselves believe that this is political policing. Are you of that view, or do you think that they were foolish and must face the consequences?
Well, you could argue both, but Greg, the thing is, the head of the UN, Tom Fletcher, the humanitarian, says they're possibly 14,000 babies going to die within the next 24, 48 hours. On Tuesday night, five trucks were allowed through. That was purely for optics by the Israelis. During the ceasefire, there were 6,000 trucks going into Gaza. Five trucks. So, and it was six, by the way, apparently there's 62,000 people dead in Gaza right now. That includes the 14,000 whose bodies are missing and won't be found until the rubble is cleared and all the rest. So in the midst of all that, somebody waving a flag at a concert, you know, a punk rock band waving a flag at a concert and saying, "Up Hezbollah," or something like that. You know, maybe they shouldn't have done it. But the point is, it's bordering on the ridiculous that any, in the midst of all that, that the British establishment, the Met Police, have decided to issue a summons for a guy at a concert.
I get exactly what you're saying. I get exactly what you're saying. And I'm not saying I disagree with you in any way, shape or form, Pat. But the two things are separate, though, are they not? That's like saying, and I don't mean this in any way insensitive, but because something terrible is happening in the world, I should be able to shoplift. And why would police chase after me for shoplifting when everyone should be really worried about what's happening in this other part of the world? The bottom line is that they did something that is illegal. Do they, should it be illegal? Should they face the full wrath of the law? Or does this mean the PSNI need to get very busy in prosecuting people for waving flags of proscribed organisations in Northern Ireland, for an example?
Yeah, Greg, take your point, and I know what you're doing. You're doing your doing the opposite, right? But here's the point: this is politics, right? I think they're being charged under the 2000 Act about a terrorism act, right? Here's the thing: you can walk down the street in London and wave an Israeli flag, no bother. Let's get this in context. Everybody says this present thing started on October 7th, 2023. Right, between 2008 and October 6th, 2023, Israel killed 6,000 Palestinians. And between January 1st, 23 and October 6th, 2023, we killed 223 Palestinians. Yet you can walk down the street in London waving an Israeli flag. But if you walk down the street saying those who oppose Israel, like Hezbollah or Hamas, and by the way, I'm not here to advocate for them. I have no time.
No, and I'm not here to. Doing. I'm certainly not here to defend Israel's actions. But the example is walking down through London waving a Palestinian flag.
No, but,
not a terrorist organization flag.
But the point is, Greg, this is politics. It is not like lifting something off a shelf, which is a crime. These are views. Surely I am entitled to my view that in Israel and the conflict between Israel and Hamas, Israel is every bit as guilty as Hamas. In fact, in my opinion, and I'm quite willing to say it openly, I believe Israel is the far greater evil than Hamas.
Yeah, it's really quite a remarkable situation that we find ourselves in, that this is happening in front of our eyes, and that, you know, the Israeli government of a people made up of a group that were wiped. The attempt was to wipe them out. Nazi Germany wanted to wipe these people out, and they're doing the same now. And also interesting that a number of countries wanted to get tough on this, European countries, and Germany was amongst one of those countries that wasn't a signatory to that. I mean, there are still people living directly affected by the Holocaust, and here we have now the Israelis, by all accounts, effectively, but except their own, undergoing a genocide against their next door neighbours. I often struggle as to how Israeli people can sleep at night knowing these young kids are skeletal now with no food.
Yeah. Greg, the Israelis have done a magnificent job in PR ways. Even things like, I would have suspicions about the voting patterns at the Eurovision.
Well, everyone does. Issue.
There's something, you know, but Michael Martin said that it was a sick joke. That the fact that they allowed five trucks in the other night. Greg, I'm going to repeat myself here, but there were 6,000 trucks a day, I think, needed during the earlier part of the ceasefire. And there's 2.3 million people living in Gaza who have had no water, no food, no electricity since the end of February, start of March. You've seen them, and I've seen them, the skeletal children. And I'm repeating myself again, because let's get this on the record. Tom Fletcher, the UN humanitarian guys, said there are 14,000 babies ready to die between the next 24 and 48 hours. And we're
like
playing
the Israelis
silly
won't
games.
Let the
we're
Israeli,
talking about kneecap.
Yes, I know, but but this is the similar thing that we were talking about earlier on. We are continuously talking about the atrocities in Gaza. But does that mean we don't discuss kneecap? Does that mean we don't discuss a very well-known pop band, one of their members, finding themselves in court on terrorism charges? You know, if you were publishing the Derry Journal newspaper today, you could put the atrocity in Gaza on the front page, but you would also perhaps put the kneecap story on page 3. And that's all I'm doing. I'm putting the kneecap story on page 3 of the program.
But let's get even right. Let's go back. The Derry Journal described Bloody Sunday as murder. Strictly speaking, that was illegal. We accused British troops of committing murder on Bloody Sunday. The British government didn't come after the Derry Journal for using the word murder, because the public
would have to disprove it.
What happened, Greg? This is about choice of language, about choice of whatever. This is political policing. You're allowed to support Israel, and what Israel has done is, let's get this in context as well. The Israelis put the people of the Palestinians off their land in 1948, took over the place and all the rest. Now, I am not saying what's happened or what's right or wrong after the Second World War. There's a whole political context here. But the people living in Palestine have rights as well, which seem to be totally ignored by the British establishment, by the American establishment. Are the people in Gaza just supposed to live their lives under subjugation?
Of course they're not. But
oppression
what,
and all the rest?
What I'm saying, Pat, is that if you want to support the people of Palestine and oppose what Israel is doing, you can fly the Palestinian flag and you can fly it high. The issue here is that NICAP opted to, and they themselves are saying that they didn't realise what they were doing. It's they themselves that opted to wave the flag of Hezbollah and to support Hamas, although they've retracted that support now. Hamas doesn't have universal support in Palestine either. You know, there's been protests taking place in Palestine over how they're approaching things. So my point being is to use your analogy, you can support the people of Gaza, or NICAP could have a massive Palestinian flag as a backdrop, you know. But anyway, I find myself in this awkward situation of trying to sort of balance this conversation out, but I could find myself being judged as supporting anything that's happening in Gaza, and I certainly wouldn't want to be in that position because it is horrendous. And we reflect in history, Pat, we reflect on history and say, how was that allowed to happen? That was crazy. Did no one stand up and say anything? And we kind of insulate ourselves with the fact that it wasn't us. And yet here we are, 2.3 million people. It's happening right now. It's happening on your phone. It's happening on your telly and your newspaper and on your radio. And for the most part, other than a bit of words, the world stands by and watches 2.3 million people being corralled into a tiny part of the world, and Israel saying, we're taking it all over and we're actually going to provide minimal support to these people, saying it out loud. We're living in that now, really, and silence sometimes is complicity. Yeah. Complicity.
But it's the hypocrisy, I think, that's getting a lot of people, myself included. Keir Starmer issued a statement with several other leaders saying what Israel was doing was monstrous. There's a media report emanating last night saying that the British government, the spy plane, actually flew for Israel and an intelligence last night. So on the public, they're saying one thing. And behind this, by the way, the other thing, Greg, I meant to mention is Starmer has refused point blank in saying that they are not supplying Israel with a certain amount of armaments. Between October 2024 and December 2024, the British government tripled the supply of arms to Israel. So they're saying one thing and doing another. And there's a lot of we have to be very careful that we don't conflate Jewishness and Israeli. There's many, many Jewish people absolutely appalled at what's going on here and who do not support the Israeli government. So, and some of them are speaking out very, very bravely. I think it's a hypocrisy that the establishment are saying one thing and doing another. And remember the famous one after the concentration camps, never again. Well, it's happening and we're sitting watching it.
Pat McCart, thanks very much for accepting our invite. Lovely to talk to you as always. Thank you very much indeed. He's a former editor of the Derry Journal newspaper and podcaster now, and lots of other things as well, author. A caller says, I've yet to hear anyone help me understand what is happening in Gaza is allowed to continue regardless of what happened first. It's impossible to explain. How could you? You can try and justify it, and people do. And you can believe that justification, but I'm about for the initial response. But as to what's happening now, there is no one could justify or explain what is happening now, legitimately, I don't think. Now, obviously, the line will be Hamas is hiding amongst these people and Hamas has to be destroyed and there's collateral damage. But for most decent people, that doesn't watch. I was watching the news recently, and it was said that regardless of what Europe does, if America doesn't agree, nothing will change and they have no intention of going against Israel. Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't do something. And I think globally, if a stand was taken, I think it would make it very difficult for the United States not to put pressure on. Now, they don't have to condemn what Israel does, but they have the power to stop what Israel is doing. That's the critical thing. They might not publicly slam Israel, but they can certainly make them stop what they're doing. Donald Trump has that within his gift.